The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another hot stove edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Lots of developments to go over in the last 48 hours. Corbin Burnes has made his decision. He goes to the Arizona Diamondbacks. We'll be getting into that. There's more context to the Walker Buehler signing, some interesting clauses. We will get into that. Teoscar Hernandez also off the board. He goes back to the Los Angeles Dodgers. So lots to unpack here. Some of it implicates the Red Sox on who they're not getting, at least. And my name is Terry Cushman, joined tonight by Charlie Smith, Jeremy Schelling, basically the early week crew for the season covering this episode. How are you, gentlemen?
Doing good, Terry.
Excellent as always.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping this episode would be about who the Red Sox did get, but it's going to be entirely about who they didn't get. So let's just go ahead and get into it. I mean, none of our expectations as of late were high on Corbin Burnes, especially after the Buehler signing. But surprisingly, we were talking about dark horses the night before, and we've got a new bench guy. We'll get into him probably later in the week. We've had some developments within our own staff, but again, we'll cover that later on. I think, who are the dark horse teams? He was mentioning the Cubs, I think. I mentioned the Nationals because, I mean, they're on Rangers. The cusp. Oh, the Rangers is exactly who he mentioned. Yeah. So none of us mentioned the Diamondbacks, but that's where he goes. That's his hometown. He lives in Scottsdale, just a 20-minute drive from the stadium. That's a six-year, $210 million deal. Opt out after the second year. He got a $10 million signing bonus. And there were some East Coast teams, at least one or two, that offered him more years, more money, but he took the shorter deal, but the higher annual average value for $35 million a year. So, Charlie, what were your thoughts on it?
I mean, I'm happy that he was able to get the contract. It's going to be possibly his last big contract. After that, it might just be like a one or two year deal once it's complete, unless he opts out and has an absolutely unreal 2026 campaign. He does have that opt out after the second year of the 6 year deal. But I mean, I'm happy for him. I mean, he pitched his butt off this year and did everything right and has earned the right to get paid. And I'm happy for him. I remember being called crazy and high for saying that this guy was a Cy Young caliber guy. And I'm excited for him. I mean, this makes the NL West the most exciting division in baseball again. So, yeah, the Diamondbacks got their guy. They spent a lot of money. This was a big showing. I mean, everybody knows who's running the show in San Francisco. And I'm really excited. You know, I'm not in LA right now, but when I get back to LA, you better believe I'll be looking forward to some Dodgers and Diamondbacks baseball, because those are going to be some epic games. And that's what you want to see. You want to see great games. You want to see great pitching. You want to see amazing offense. And you don't want to see a blowout. You just want to see a great game. And the Diamondbacks are going to give the NL West what baseball needs, which is a competitor to the Los Angeles Dodgers, which are an absolute juggernaut. So pumped for it. I'm really excited.
Jeremy.
Yeah, I mean, my biggest takeaway before, I mean, look, I'm always happy for the player, right? These guys work their whole lives to get to that point. They all take tremendous risks by not pursuing, you know, your standard careers. So anytime a guy gets his money, I'm happy for him. My big takeaway is he doesn't go to a team that is going to be a direct competitor of the Red Sox. So in that sense, the Red Sox win here because he's on the West Coast. He's in the NL. If we ever have to deal with it, it's in the World Series, which is a real good problem to have. You know, my other thing is – go ahead, Charlie.
You know, to your point, the Red Sox win and the Yankees win too. So it helps us and hurts us at the same time. You know, if Corbin Burns had signed a deal with the Yankees, this would have dramatically changed things. But after they added Max Fried for – that crazy was 8 years to 18, right? 8 to 18. I can't remember off the top of my head.
That is correct.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, to Jeremy's point, the Red Sox win, the Yankees win too. So it's a good and bad.
Well, I mean, if you add Burns to Baltimore, to New York, it's just another makes more competition, which, you know, is great for exciting games and good matchups. But if you're trying to get to the World Series, this is a player out of the way. But beyond that, my biggest takeaway is, and I thought I saw something last night that the Red Sox never actually got around to offering Burns a deal. And when we were starting, I was trying to find the tweet and I couldn't find it. So I don't know if that's real or I'm just making it up, but this is just another player that the Red Sox say they're in on and they're not in on it. So you can add them to the list of Soto and Fried and now Burns, and we're going to talk about Teoscar Hernandez. But this front office thing of saying we're in on somebody and not going and getting them is really starting to just piss me off. You at least in part acknowledge that you have $700 million to spend, you know, even if it's $70 million a year, and then you're just not going to go spend any of it. And by the way, there's no Bueller extension. So, not Bueller, Crochet extension. So, every day that goes, you know, in towards the spring training without that thing done, I have increasing concerns with. So, those are my takeaways with this Burns signing.
With Crochet, real quick, I think that'll happen in spring training. If you're like last week of March and it hasn't happened yet, I would get really worried. But we have seen a few happen literally hours before opening day. Xander Bogaerts, Rick Porcello, perhaps one or two others. But that will come.
Different front office, though.
True.
And by the way, it can be the same owner, but not acting the same way.
True. Yeah. One of my concerns is Breslow's just never negotiated that type of a deal. So can he do it is my concern.
Theo can go ahead and handle that.
Well, that
he works for the team.
That could be.
Theo Epstein should. And if John Henry wants to save some money, then why are you paying Theo Epstein all this money to go run Roush Fenway? That you should be able to pull Theo out of whatever duties he's doing to go negotiate a deal like the Crochet deal. That should not be a concern. You have the tools within the organization. You should not put Breslow in that spot. He's got enough to worry about trying to figure out who's the sixth reliever and a right-handed bat that's going to help balance the lineup. That should not be a Breslow task.
Well, or at least just be in the room with Breslow to, you know, for him to lean on. But getting back to Burns real quick, I was just thinking as you guys were giving your takes, I'm like, where would he have ranked on my offseason wish list? And he would have been probably fourth. Max Fried was number one. Trading for George Kirby or Logan Gilbert from the Mariners, those were my two and three coming into, you know, free agency here or hot stove season. And then I probably would have slotted Burns in at number four. The reason he's kind of a little bit lower on my list, and it's nothing others haven't talked about, is every year the strikeout rate comes down. It's just, and it's fallen fairly significantly. 2020 shortened season, he had a 13.3 strikeout rate, off the charts. The next season it came down, but it, you know, it should, if it, you know, from 13.3, it was 12.6 strikeouts per nine, still off the charts. That led Major League Baseball in 2021, 12.6. He also won the Cy Young that year. Then the following season, it fell almost 2 points to 10.8. This is 2022. Year after that, 2023, it falls to 9.3. You know, still above league average, but this most recent season, it slipped down to 8.4. So he's striking out a lot less guys. He's still getting outs. He's still a horse. He's pitched 190 more or more innings the last 3 years in a row. So there's still a lot to like there, but over the course of 6 or 7 years, it's fair to question the back end of that. So I would have signed him, but you know, there was a reason he was fourth on my list, and that was a big part of it. Let's talk about the Diamondbacks real quick. They're looking pretty good. I mean, you can't top the Dodgers, but they traded for Josh Naylor, one of the more productive first basemen in the league. You got Ketel Marte at second base. That's pretty good. Eugenio Suarez had a kind of a breakout season. He's kind of been an all or nothing power hitter. He'll give you 25, 30 bombs, but probably hit, you know, 210, 220. But he's coming off of a great season. Geraldo Perdomo at shortstop. Their outfield leaves a little bit to be, well, not exactly, I guess. They got Corbin Carroll, Lourdes Gurriel, Jake McCarthy. They've got a wealth of pitching. So this is a team that should win 90 games, I would say. Charlie?
You also forgot to mention the fact that Willy Adames is also in San Francisco as well. Like, that team's going to be, I think, a little bit more, as they say, more better. They're going to be a lot better than, I think, a 90-win team. And if health is playing on their side and not playing for the Dodgers side, as was a catastrophe in 2023, the Dodgers lost, I think, 6 starters or 7 starters during the course of the season. You know, Clayton Kershaw was coming back. Walker Buehler went down. Dustin May was done for the whole season. Tyler Glasnow missed a significant part of the season. Shohei Ohtani was done for the entire season. So, I mean, you look at it on paper. Tony Gonsolin was gone. This was a team that dealt with an immense number of injuries. And if they have that going against them again, Giants could be a dark horse team that could take the NL West. I know it seems like a shock, but it wouldn't surprise me. You know, you mentioned some of those names again. Corbin Burns is going to want to prove himself. Willy Adames is going to want to prove himself. You know that the Giants front office is going to buy up and do whatever they need to do if the team is doing well to compete against the Dodgers. I mean, the Diamondbacks this year have a payroll of $187 million. The Dodgers have a payroll of over $300 million. Granted, the Dodgers have Shohei Ohtani. They also have, you know, Tyler Glasnow, who they've committed a lot of money to. They got Blake Snell, who they've committed a lot of money to. Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman, we know, are getting a lot of money. Yamamoto's not getting as much as they are, but, you know, Teoscar Hernandez is getting a lot of money as well. So I think the Giants could be a really fun dark horse. If people don't have them winning the NL West, they're definitely going to have them as the top wild card team, worst case scenario, second best wild card team.
I mean, honestly, I'd still pick the Diamondbacks. Like, here's the Giants roster real quick. Just the lineup, though. I mean, they've obviously got the pitching. There's no debating that. But first base, Lamont Wade Jr. doesn't overwhelm me. Tyler Fitzgerald at second. Matt Chapman at third. He had a great 2024. I think that's going to fall a little bit. Willy Adames at shortstop. He'll hit some dingers, but he's going to strike out quite a bit. Left field, Elio Ramos. Center field, Grant McRae. Mike Yastrzemski in right. I just can't get there. I would certainly not hesitate to pick the Diamondbacks to at least win more, you know.
They're going to win more than 90 games.
Okay, fair enough.
I think they'll win more than 90.
Fair enough. Just a random question, kind of getting back to the Diamondbacks. Again, their rotation just absolutely stacked. They've got Zach Gallen, Brandon Pfaadt, Eduardo Rodriguez, Merrill Kelly. They've also got Jordan Montgomery. And that leads me to this question. The last hope here, if you want to try to dump Masataki Yoshida, call up the Diamondbacks, say, I'll give you Masataki Yoshida. They don't really have a DH, an obvious DH right now. and be like, we'll take on Jordan Montgomery's $25 million. So you're eating almost half of Yoshida's contract by taking on a bad contract. And I don't know what you do with Montgomery, but you know, you have more trade capital with guys like Crawford and whatnot. So that's just one way to get out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I would do it. I just don't think the Diamondbacks will. So according to FanSided, their pitching rotation right now is Burns, Gallen, Kelly, Eduardo Rodriguez, and Brandon Pfaff. So, I mean, that is absolutely impressive that they were able to build that. The fact that they still have Montgomery, if he goes into opening day on the roster, you know, that just creates a ton of flexibility. We talk about it all the time with the Red Sox. No team goes and doesn't have injuries, skips starts. Somebody only goes 1 2/3 and just blows through the bullpen. Like, there's always a need for that extra guy. So their rotation is, at least as we sit here right now, is not limited to the five expected to be in the rotation. So the other thing about the Diamondbacks that I love is their manager, former Red Sox guy, Torrey Lovello. I think he's one of the better managers in the league. He obviously brought them on a deep run a couple of years ago. So, I'm expecting if they stay healthy, if they, you know, can avoid multiple injuries in the rotation, this team to be absolutely in the mix as we go into October.
Charlie, thoughts on pitching and a potential hypothetical Yoshida move?
I mean, if we're just going to talk about pitching, I mean, I don't know how much more you can add. Like, if truth be told, if everything does go, Jeremy, go ahead.
I think the biggest issue you're going to have with Terry's plan, just to jump in, Charlie, quick, is I believe Montgomery's only got 1 year left.
He does.
Yoshida's got three, so it's not like a bad player for a bad player, similar contract situation. Like, there's an additional 2 years on Yoshida's deal that makes that not a player for player. So there'd have to be something else involved to sweeten the pot.
Well, yeah, I agree.
You're taking on $25 million in salary on Montgomery and sending 53. So
realistically speaking, though, do you think that Yoshida is going to be worse this year than last? Because I don't. I think Yoshida is going to be better this year than last year. And honestly, if you think about it, go ahead.
No, I didn't mean to cut you off. I thought you were done.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
My problem with Yoshida is that he can only DH, and we are just so left-handed heavy. Like, that should be a spot that helps balance the lineup and creates roster flexibility, and it's doing the exact opposite. So I personally, do I think he's going to be better? Yeah, I think if he avoids injuries, he's going to put the ball in play. He's going to get on base. He can't run. He can't run the bases effectively. Like, Veritek was always a slow base runner. Pedroia was never the fastest guy in the world, but they knew how to run the bases. Like, Yoshida looks like a robot doing the right, left, right army chant. He can't play any defense whatsoever, nor is there any need on this team with how we're built and with Anthony coming up. So he just doesn't fit our roster in any way. There's no way to pigeonhole him in that makes logical sense.
So as far as Yoshida's concerned, if Yoshida were to go to the Giants, it would theoretically fill a gap because the Giants had Soler last year and he's gone. He's now in LA. He's playing not for the Dodgers, for the Angels. And I don't recall the exact term that he signed. Couldn't have been anything insane, but I can't justify them taking on that kind of money. Jeremy already talked about sweetening the pot. I don't think Montgomery's going to be worse this year than last year either. I think both had kind of like a freaky deaky kind of like weird one-off year. And I think surprisingly, I could be in the minority here, but I think Yoshida may do better this year and surprise a lot of people. And he may have increased value if we wait, if we're really trying to move him and then move him later on, as opposed to moving him before the season starts. I don't like the idea of Montgomery also, regardless of the amount of money that we're taking on. I think he'll do better, but I just don't. I've never been a Montgomery fan. So I thought, you know, he had a great year when he was there. As Terry has coined the expression, you're going to pay the World Series premium. It's still not a premium I'm willing to pay for that player. So at the end of the day, as ugly as it may seem, Yoshida, I would still probably rather have on the team than Montgomery. And there are going to be some people that hate that. But if Yoshida can be that serviceable guy that we had down the stretch of last season, because truth be told, we did rely on Yoshida a lot more than people want to admit. Who knows what could happen there? Yeah, Jeremy, go.
Yeah, I mean, I just disagree, because if you can get rid of Yoshida and Montgomery blows, he only blows for 1 year and then he's not your problem. So
right, yeah, right.
It's a limited window, and I get your point, and I don't think Yoshida's value can go any lower. I mean, even if he performs the same way, has another injury next year, he only has 2 years left, and for that reason, he's going to be easier to move. He's going to be owed less money, which means the Red Sox may be more willing to, you know, pay some of that to get him out of town. I won't restate it because I can do that, but. If we can trade 3 years of Yoshida and 1 year of Montgomery, and even if Montgomery gives you nothing, that means we're free of it all walking into 2026.
I hear what you're saying. I don't hate it. I just don't like it, because I think Yoshida will offer possibly more at the beginning of the year. And if you really don't like it, there may be a team willing to take on that deal without us having to package something sweet to quote, you know, like sweeten the pot or sweeten the deal. I hear what you're saying, because you're sucking up 25 or 26, whatever the deal is this year for Montgomery. I actually, now that you say it, I'm actually curious myself. I want to look it up, because I hear what you're saying, because he's owed 18.6 for the next 3 years, right? So he's owed like 54 or 55
yeah,
million.
That's exactly so what it is. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So you've got that versus Montgomery, who's going to be getting 20. I think it's like a shade over 26 million. Let me see. Nope. 22.5. Okay, cool. So 32 million in savings over the next 2 years, 33 million in savings over the next 2 years past 2025. If Montgomery quote blows and Yoshida doesn't quote blow as bad, and it's tradable, I still think there's a way to move that contract in a better manner where you don't have to take on something that sucks and you're still just wasting money for the sake of wasting money. You know,
hypothetical.
Sure.
What if the trade was Masataka Yoshida and Crawford for Montgomery? Would you do it?
They're too crowded, I think, to take on a pitcher.
Yeah, I don't think they would do it.
They would just slot him in the bullpen and have him there when Eduardo Rodriguez goes down for 2 weeks? You don't think they'd want that depth piece?
Possibly. I mean, the other way to look at it is you might only have Burns for 2 years because he has that opt out. Gallen is a free agent after the coming year, so. I mean, it's not the most, you know.
They have a good bullpen.
Well, just for context, though, let me just throw this in there. Breslow was almost willing to give up Tristan Casas solely to get out of that contract. So I don't think there's a deal. I think Breslow says yes to Montgomery in a millisecond. It's just whether or not the Diamondbacks will do that deal, and they don't have. I mean, their DH is Herrera, Encarnacion, and Wilmer Flores. So even being a platoon DH, I think Yoshida is an upgrade over them. So I think there would be a little bit of value there. Just throwing it out there. I mean, we're gonna keep trying to come up with scenarios, but the deadline for Yoshida. Like decision time on him at the absolute latest is when Roman Anthony gets called up. Like, cause you could get an outfielder in the meantime, but you're going to need a place to put that outfielder when Anthony gets called up, because you're not taking Duran out of the outfield. You're not taking Rafaela out of the outfield, barring a story injury, which could happen. But until then, you're keeping your elite defense intact in the outfield. So you've got until Anthony comes up in May or June. Like, there'll be enough data on Yoshida to start the season. Is the bat speed there? Is the exit velo there? Is he putting the ball in play? All the normal metrics. So we'll see. But Teoscar is off the board, and Bregman's out there. And I know Charlie doesn't want him. I'm not crazy about him. Jeremy can weigh in on how he feels. The deal I put it out on Twitter earlier, the deal I'm willing to do, and it's not one he would take, I do 4 years, $100 million, so that's 25 per year with an opt-out after every year. Just if he thinks he can rebuild his value in Boston this year, hit the market again next year. I don't know what the market looks like for infielders, maybe the following year, but that's the most I'm willing to do. But we need a right-handed bat. If we go into this season losing Tyler O'Neill, not adding any...
We have lost Tyler O'Neill.
Yeah, no, not I know.
We have.
I'm just saying if we don't replace him at all. I still think more likely than not we win 90 games, but it's going to be stressful, and we'll look back and say there was an easier path to get there.
Who could, in theory, if not Bregman, who could we still sign as far as right-handed bats of value? There's only one guy, and you're going to have to overpay. Outside of Bregman.
Who's that?
Who still hasn't signed?
Oh, brain farts, Charlie. Who is it?
Pete Alonso. Unless I missed something.
It is Alonso.
Pete Alonso is the only right-handed bat that hasn't signed. Sorry, that wasn't supposed to be like a crazy thing. But like, you're going to have to overpay to get somebody like that. If you have Pete Alonso in your lineup, you're getting 30-plus home runs. The monster in Pete Alonso would be a love relationship worth watching 81 times a year. The problem is, I don't know if paying $30 million or something close to it for Pete Alonso over the course of 3-4 years is a smart play, considering all the potential first basemen we have on our team. Pete Alonso isn't going to play third base. Pete Alonso isn't going to play anything else other than first. And truth be told, in a couple of years, he probably is a DH over a first baseman if you have like a perfect storm situation. But 2 years, $60 million for Pete Alonso, would you do that?
Well, hang on. So I was just about to jump in with this. There was a report over the weekend that he did turn down 3 years, $90 million already from the Mets.
Okay. So, 2 years, $65 million. 2 years, $68 million. No opt out. Would you do that?
I don't know. It's so hard to know what his market is. The Giants are connected to him at the moment, per reports.
If the Giants get Pete Alonso, and forgive me because I don't remember the dimensions in their stadium. I'm actually going to look it up at Oracle Park because I don't know the dimensions. Are the odds? Yeah.
It's the least home run friendly park that there is. Yeah.
354 in left field. Left center is 399. Center field is 391, right center 415, right field 365. The right field line is 309.
Yeah, not a good park for righties.
Not great, right? And Pete Alonso can hit it everywhere. I mean, we saw him in the playoffs. He wasn't just ripping it to left field. He had a mammoth home run off of Devin Williams, and it went over the wall in right field. So he can hit it everywhere. He does have the power. Pete Alonso goes to the Giants. If he signs a 4-year 134, he probably would say yes to that. Do you think he's going to get a better deal than 4-134? Because I don't. I really don't. I don't think he's going to get a 5-year deal. I don't think he's going to get a 6-year deal.
Well, that's what he wants. He's 30 years old. I don't think he can do anything but a 1-year deal to bet on himself. I think you're putting yourself at risk doing anything longer than that. You're getting to age 32, 33. The physical tools are going to diminish. I mean, I think he's smart enough to know that, which is why he turned down the 3-90. So if you have an interest in the short term, go pay this guy top, you know, dollar for 1 year. Have him in your clubhouse. If you like him, try to extend him. But there, if he has a good year, he's going to want next year's his year, and then it's going to be passed. Then he's going to be playing on 1 or 2 year deals. I do like the player at Fenway. I like him better if you don't have Yoshida, because you can just plug him in and have him just mash home runs.
But you can't do anything with him unless you trade Yoshida or Casas. There was an article. It was either by Cotillo or Ian Brown, and I apologize to both of them for not remembering exactly, but the way they worded it, it really seemed to suggest that the Red Sox could simply just DFA Yoshida.
I don't think that's a smart play. You're going to DFA somebody that could potentially be a game changer. Again, we don't know, right? Nobody knows. But I just don't think that's a smart play. I really don't.
Guys.
Jeremy.
In what world has anything John Henry done in the last 5 years lead you to believe that this D-bag is going to eat $50-plus million?
I don't see it happening.
There is no way on God's glorious green earth that this guy's all of a sudden going to turn around while simultaneously not improving the roster and just eat $50 million plus. It ain't happening.
There is one sort of relevant precedent.
This should be fun. Go ahead, Terry.
Pablo Sandoval.
Yeah, no, absolutely not.
Again,
that's a different error. That John Henry was acting differently back then. Different. Like that, I believe that was in the Dombrowski period of time, correct?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, it's like Dombrowski would just shoot from the hip, and he had John Henry's blessing. Unfortunately, Dombrowski simultaneously ruined Henry for spending money. And there's John Henry, Dombrowski, to when he bought the team, and then there's John Henry after. Totally different individual.
Can I say something about Pablo Sandoval since we're talking about it for one quick second? I thought his career was going to be over in 2017. I really thought Pablo Sandoval was going to be done in baseball after the whole incident in Boston. I didn't think any other team was going to give him a chance, including the San Francisco Giants. I'm shocked and appalled that he got another chance and was able to kind of resurrect his career, for the lack of a better term. An absolute slob, just a disgrace to baseball.
Okay.
Yoshida is not that.
So I have the article up, and who wrote it? It was a Mass Live article. It was Cotillo. All right. Here's how he words it. And I'm going to give Cotillo credit. Like, his pulse on things is pretty accurate. I mean, right after I don't know who was on these shows at that point, but, you know, 5 or 6 weeks ago when we were saying, no way in hell does the Red Sox give Nick Pivetta the qualifying offer. Every one of us vehemently said, no way, not going to happen, would never happen. And then Cotillo on his podcast says, I'm hearing it's probably going to happen. And then it did, you know, and there's so many examples of that. But here's his article. And I lost my spot. Okay, here it is. He just says, and this is like towards the end, he says, it remains to be seen if Yoshida has any type of future in Boston. And, you know, he went on with last year's stats, but I don't know.
That's ridiculous.
I wouldn't.
That's ridiculous.
I wouldn't. And again, we tried to give away Tristan Casas for free, essentially, just to get out of Yoshida.
And it didn't happen.
Because the Mariners thinks he's trash. So he's trash. Yeah. So
to your credit, you did say, from the perspective of being Tristan Casas, not only do the Boston Red Sox not want me, other teams don't want me either. So why does nobody want me?
He's weird.
The fact that it's there's just something about him. I mean,
he's weird and he only plays 60 games.
It really sucks because he could be a 3,100 guy if he's healthy. If you look at his numbers and you just kind of average it out, even depreciate like some of the stats a little bit, Tristan Casas could be a 3,100 guy.
I had like an anti-Casas tweet or something, probably on the Bastards account, and And someone responded under with a graphic with his quote of Trevor Story saying, "When I saw him naked in the shower, man, it fired me up." You know, just yeah, as an example, just, of we weird. Need to get rid of this weird. Guy now. Yeah.
Yeah, it was just weird.
So, but that's what I'm saying. Here, or go ahead.
No, I mean, the problem is he could be a 3,100 guy.
Sure.
You know, like Terry could have been a 3,100 guy in his prime. Like, until you go out and do it, it's, okay. I mean, you
We're
know,
gonna go
like,
that route.
I didn't mean to take a shot at Terry there. Okay. Although it was
sometimes
a welcome
you need
opportunity. But my point is like, I and look, if the plan is, you know, Casas is taking care of himself. He's yep. in shape. He's healthy. The best right. thing may be to do is swallow your pride, put him at first, have him hit 30 and 100, and then either he's a productive member of your organization or now he has this tremendous value. But MLB teams with analytics and everything else, this isn't 10, 20 years ago where that possibility is enticing to a number of clubs. Like, everything's so analytically driven. There's no analytics on this guy across 162-game slate. So he's got to go do it.
I agree. Yep.
Whoa. Didn't expect that.
Yeah, no, I mean, he does have to do it. You're not wrong. He does have to do it. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is, I'm going to say that kind of power doesn't accidentally happen. I don't think this is like Michael Chavis, who just couldn't be patient and just swung at everything and was, you know, I mean, not like Javier Baez, like swinging a whole strike zone away from the strike zone bad. But I hear what you're saying. Like, yeah, he does have to hit 30 home runs and 100 RBIs. He has to be visible for 150 games or more. And what's going to happen is, Tristan Casas isn't going to be paid that $150 million contract because we don't know if he can stay healthy. And to your point, we don't know if he can hit 30 home runs. To the best of his career, he has only done, I think it was 26 home runs, maybe 24. 24 home runs, 65 RBIs in 132 games. So he's yet to hit the 3,100 marker. He's not going to steal bases. He's only stolen one base in his career. He's 1-for-2 in 3 seasons. He's 24 years old. I don't really believe that he's hit his prime yet. So I think there's still an opportunity for at least 130 and at least 100, at least one 100 RBI season. Yes, Jeremy.
The other thing that I think hurts his trade value is he's not playing ball on the Rafaela early extension game plan. So I think that lowers his tradability as well, just because a team could look at him and go, well, that's great. We get him for his arbitration years, but he's not going to sign here reasonably. So, you know, that's another thing, is if maybe you can get that extension in place. Hey, look, Tristan, you haven't been healthy. We're offering you lifelong financial freedom. Be smart here, which he's not, and I don't think he's interested in it. But if you can somehow get that contract in place, then it may become something that you can move him. But guy speaking, like, he has no early extension desires, can't stay healthy. You know, I just don't think he, and look, we haven't even talked about his personality.
It's interesting because last year, the one of the bigger conversations right now was, you have to extend Tristan Casas. You have to do it right now. His OPS coming into last winter was third in all of Major League Baseball in the second half of 2023. So he had tons of momentum and was finally living up to the hype. And there's no talks of that. And like I said, they just to get rid of Yoshida, they tried to put him in there. Here's one of my complaints about Casas that nobody's really talking about. He's not a doubles hitter. He's slow. He's the slowest runner on the team. And he's what, 23 years old, something like that? So that's a problem. He's a very injury-prone, unathletic baseball player. And, you know, yeah, he'll put the ball in play. He's got elite recognition in the strike zone. And he's got some power, but it's singles, or he's taking one bag, or he's taking four bags, and that's it.
Yeah, not wrong. That was something that was a little frustrating. The doubles numbers, as far as like the per season average, did go down last year. And it was, to your point, it was either singles and home runs, which was kind of like a weird line. Usually, you know, sometimes you're going to get lucky with a couple extra doubles, and it would have made more sense to see somebody with like 15 to 20. But this is also someone that was, you know, during the course of the season, taking dry swings in his mind. And there was a lot of like weird psychological things that were going on this year for not only himself, but for fans, because he was taking dry swings like in his mind and practicing thousands of times, which literally made no sense to anybody, whether you watch baseball or not, whether you get baseball or not. That's not part of the game. Exactly zero people in Major League Baseball history over 100 years have taken dry swings in their mind and thought that's an excuse or a legitimate like justification for getting better or headed in the right direction. You know, he created headlines for all the wrong reasons and took away from possibly some points during the course of the season that were actually great for Boston. Like, Boston was trending in the right direction, but we're talking about Tristan Casas's dry swings. You know, it was just, it was frustrating. I mean, Sox fans across everywhere, it doesn't matter if you were pro this, pro that, you were frustrated with some of the comments that came out because you're trying to understand some of the comments that were being made, and you can't. You just can't. It makes zero sense. They're frustrating.
Here's a crazy stat for you. I'm fact-checking it right now. Devers is 28? My bad. Never mind. Not a crazy stat. I thought he was only a year or two younger than Devers, but this will be Casas's age 25 season. So I don't really have a ton more to add. I mean, we're kind of in limbo. Let me wrap with this. You do have an overabundance of trade capital, major league ready trade capital. You have Casas still, if you want to do it. You've got Willy Abreu, Cutter Crawford, Richard Fitz, Quinn Priester. And I know I'm forgetting one more in there. There's a lot of moves that can be made with those three guys to get what you need. So there should be one significant move coming.
I would hope.
Asterisk. Should be.
I don't know. We'll see what happens. We need the Bregman domino to fall, but there does seem to be a little bit of momentum with Detroit on him. And for what it's worth, you really haven't heard a ton about Alex Bregman since the Casas thing fell through to the Mariners. It's just been pretty quiet. So not a lot of reason to believe he's going to end up with the Red Sox. So we'll wrap on that. We'll be back no later than the middle of the week to discuss any other developments and possibly sooner if there is a development. So just stay tuned. And if we don't talk to you before New Year's Day, hope you all have a safe one. Hope everyone's responsible. Take care.